Welcome back, y'all. Dr. Nicole Truesdell here. As always, I'm your host and guide for this podcast, Evolutionist Dreamscape. So welcome. All right, y'all, we're at episode 16. I'm still here. You're here. We're here together as always. And thank you as well for your continued support. So this episode I'm going to turn to in a minute is actually a conversation I had recently with a friend, a collaborator, and somebody who I am actively building community with currently, Forrest Brooks. Now, Forrest is a songwriter, producer, and an artist with a background as an educator in both the public and corporate sector, and as a publicist in the entertainment industry. Aside from all that, he's a foodie with a penchant for intellectualizing and sometimes overanalyzing pop culture. And this is where me and Forrest connect. I'm ruled by Mars as a Scorpio rising. Forrest is a Libra rising, ruled by Venus. And we really do just kind of click together in the ways that we can talk about music, talk about art, talk about pop culture, talk about politics, and do it all while having a drink. So this episode's also a sip and chat, in which Forrest and I are talking about what it means to be 42 and right now. As both of us have broken parts of our lives, both of us have left 15-year relationships, ironically, and are now out here trying to both be in these streets dating safely, while at the same time wanting to be more creative and sit in our creativity. And so this is what brought us together as well. In we're going to be doing an event together in Chicago on June 2nd called Dreaming at the Crossroads. I'll have more information in the show notes below and as we get closer to the date. But we're going to be doing this kind of group contemplation, meditation, music building, new world building through a Black queer lens. And so Forrest is making some original music soundtrack. And I'm working on some guided contemplation, and we're going to come together at literally the crossroads at the Honeycomb Co-op, which is in Humboldt Park on the west side of Chicago. So this is a way for us to be able to come together and really figure out what does it mean to break our lives at 42 and create the life that we really want. And this is what the episode's about, y'all. This episode is really about us talking about us being in our Uranus opposition. So a little astrology real quick before we go to the interview. So when you hit about 36, you begin what many call the astrological middle age. That's when you're going to start having your second nodal return. Shortly after, you're going to have a Saturn square. Now, in all of that, until you hit about 45, 46, it really depends upon your chart and where the places of the planets are. You're also going to be going through some outer planet fuckery. That's how I say it. That Neptune square, a Pluto square, and then a Uranus opposition. And this is really the timing of life in which it's like generationally and structurally, we're all being asked to examine our life and really ask ourselves, are the choices we made, the locations we're in, how we even see and understand ourselves, is it really who we are? Does this really work? And are we willing to change? Especially when you're in your Uranus opposition, which both Forrest and I are in right now at 42, based upon where our Uranus natally sits. So if your Uranus is a Scorpio, you most likely have been going through or in about to go through your Uranus opposition, since Uranus is currently in Taurus. And it'll be there until, I believe, next year, where it'll finally make its way into Aries. Into Gemini. So this is a time in which shit gets weird. It's also a time when shit gets broken, because Uranus is a planet of change, of chaos, of rebellion, of electricity, right? Of the higher octave of Mercury. So it's a different way we communicate, that we can move beyond just the kind of things that are told to us to really come into our knowing, because Uranus represents this kind of knowing genius, this kind of electric kind of, you know, ideas that just pop out that really can be weird, because the weirdness is you sitting in your own individuality, because Uranus really also rules individuality, but not through a capitalistic lens, y'all. Uranus is really about that life where it's like, no, who the fuck are you? Can you show up authentically as you? Even if it starts to break things around you, maybe it needed to be broken, because Uranus represents change. So what happens when the change is at the front door, right? What happens when you're in this age bracket, y'all? An age and a time of life in which, in society, a capitalistic society, especially in the US, we're told you should already know. And if you start changing your life at this time, then all of a sudden you are seen as weird, right? You are seen as somehow different. But because society is so about conformity, it will really make you box yourself more in. And so for me, I'm really like, that doesn't make any sense. The older we get, the more we're supposed to actually embrace change, because we understand that that is the only thing that is going to be constant. So I want to talk with Forrest and be like, well, shit, what does it look like for me and you to break our lives at 42 as we're out here, both again, in these kind of streets, but also in our own creativity as we're trying to create these new worlds. So this is what the episode's about, y'all. And I'm doing things a little bit differently. So the very beginning of it is just kind of us talking, because I caught us talking about our current dating life. And then we go into the episode. So let me know what you think in the comments below, okay? No matter what platform you're on, let me know how this resonates. I'm still experimenting. This podcast is going to be shifting and melding as I just get more comfortable in my own weirdness, quite frankly, my own creativity and how I'm really experimenting with my business and my work going forward. So again, your comments are great. And if it resonates, this is what I also want to know, because I'm hoping that when I bring folks on talking about their lives, we're talking about different concepts, different times, different issues that are going on, that it does resonate so that other people also feel as if you can also make space and do creating in the way that makes sense for you. Okay. Okay. I got to start this again. I completely lost my train of thought.
Okay.
I lost my train of thought. I was just going, that's why I was trying to fuck around and get to the bad point and I couldn't. So Dreamy, I literally couldn't remember the goddamn name. I was like, Nicole, what the fuck is the name? It's not coming. It's not coming. You're making no more sense. Okay, start again.
I got you. Okay. I got you.
All right. And I think I have a pre-date tomorrow. Like the woman I met on Sunday, she wants to meet up before we meet up for our date. So I was like, oh, do you like me?
I'm going for we're supposed to do, I think, karaoke tomorrow.
Oh my God, that's a great date idea.
Yeah, so it should be fun. When I talk to this dude, I got a good vibe from him.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because he's the first person that requested a FaceTime.
You don't FaceTime before you meet?
What? Not always.
You would meet somebody before you FaceTime? Is that a gay man thing? Like women want pictures, women want FaceTime, women want
safety. Yeah, safety. So that makes sense.
But you need safety too.
I do, but as long as I'm meeting at a public place, then it is what it is.
No, that is reproducing white patriarchy. What do you mean? You need to meet. What if that is like some person that is not who they say they are and you show up and they kidnap you?
This is true. I could be trafficked.
Forrest, like, no, I need to know before you go on dates now who you're going with. Because if you haven't FaceTimed ahead of time, like, how do you know it's that? No.
Don't, I mean, because we're what men are doing. We meet in event, and then we meet there.
Men should be FaceTimed.
Okay, so let me be very clear. I'm not going to meet anybody at their crib.
Does it matter?
I'm just meeting like at a public place to say, okay, if your FaceTime, if your deal matches your deal there, then I'll be able to, like, and if it doesn't, it doesn't.
Okay, so let's talk about this, because that's a false sense of security that my ass also felt as well until Spirit said, bitch, you thought you were secure and safe, like putting you in public. When I first came out and I left that man before I was divorced, right? I had went up to Nobody's Darling. I remember I dropped my kid off in Michigan. I said, fuck it, I'm going to drive up to Nobody's Darling. And it was Sunday afternoon. It was during Pride as well, because Andersonville had a bunch of shit going on. So it was a bitch trying to find parking. I'm sitting outside with my drink in my hand, and I got harassed by two men walking down the street who decided to sit down in front of me in a gay bar with folks all around to harass me, asking me, oh, you know, they're saying like, oh, are you the owner? And I'm like, I'm not the owner. Like, I was so confused too. So like, this is my first time even being outside. Like, I'm newly gay, newly single, newly outside, right? Like, it's like a whole lot going on after 15 years. Okay. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, and I'm literally on Tinder because I had no idea what I was doing. So like, that was my first app and it was awful. So I was like, what am I doing? I've done Hinge, right? Like, and I also try, I'm on Match right now, but that's another conversation. So like I'm sitting outside and see, I remember the last time I was dating was in my 20s. And like then I always had this like overconfidence because I was 6'3", the men wouldn't harass me, even though I was constantly getting harassed by men. But in my mind, I blew it off. So then being 40, sitting there with like these grown ass men, right? And I'm in like a gay ass section in a gay ass bar in which they felt that comfortable to sit across from me and literally say to my face, "So you feel uncomfortable?" And I say, "Yes." And they were like, "Oh, why?" Right? Like, to the point where the people around were like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "I'm going to go inside." And I had to ask the bartender to like help me. So the owner had to come out. And like, they had both eventually left. And the people at the bar said that that was happening a lot with like men, just because that was when people were first coming outside after lockdowns. In which, and so men were like literally going around harassing. And for me, like when I walk, and this is broad daylight, summertime, a Sunday, right? And they were that bold. So I'm telling you this, don't be overconfident, men out there dating other men. Y'all need to be FaceTiming each other before. You need to be FaceTiming before you meet somebody. That's my mama coming out.
I will start implementing. Yeah, because he was the first person that brought it up. Because everybody else, I was like, okay, well, I'll meet you at a bar. I'll meet you at, you know, when I met the old dude, when we met to, like, went to Warlord. I just met him there. Okay. It's fair. I will take you.
Okay, good. Okay, so let's start. Okay. I think we're probably going to use that too, honestly. That might be the intro. All right, so y'all, welcome back. It's Dr. Nicole Truesdell here. As always, I'm your host and guide for this podcast, Abolitionist Dreamscape, so welcome. All right, y'all, so this is episode 16, y'all. So this is going to be a sip and chat episode with my friend, my collaborator, my cousin, and somebody who is really helping me understand and redefine what community is, because it's about that life, about community, and he puts his shit into practice, Forrest Brooks. So Forrest, can you please introduce yourself to the people?
I am an educator by trade. I've done so in the public sector as a K-12 educator. I used to teach English for hormonally charged high school students. But then I left that to do the same thing in the public sector. In the corporate sector, excuse me. And prior to that, I've had a life as a publicist. But throughout all of that, I have been a songwriter, a producer, an artist, and just somebody, a creative, who's just been kind of figuring out lanes to kind of pay for my creativity. Because capitalism. But that's how I'm most defined, as a creative who's an artist, but also an educator, because that is like, those are equal parts of my identity.
And something I love about Forrest and how we connected really was through both the love of, I think, intellectualism and art, quite frankly, and art and music itself and creativity. Because
my Virgo ass be overthinking.
And this is what we're going to get into. Because so Forrest is a Libra rising, so ruled by Venus, right? But a Virgo of a sun. And what is your moon again? Your Libra moon?
Libra
moon is right, because it's got a big old Libra stallion. Forrest got a Libra stallion. So So hence the head, but also the creativity. So Forrest is Venus led. Now I'm a Scorpio rising. As you follow this podcast, you know, Taurus moons, Leo sun. So that means I'm Mars ruled. So this is basically a conversation between Venus and Mars at the crossroads of life of being middle aged, because we're both 42. Right. And something that we've been talked a lot about is what does it mean to like kind of be this age right now in which it feels like we can do nothing but create, like where it feels like busting out of my skin sometimes because all of the supposed to's that we were supposed to have done that we all did that left most of us broken and broke. Either with a fucked up house or trying to get a fucked up house. Either way, we're paying too much money. So like, it's like, what does it mean to be at this crossroad in life, especially when we are in a time of change and revolution? Let's be real, because if we're going to bring astrology in, the astrology is telling us whether we want it or not, society is changing. Like the outer planets are moving, right? Where we already seen Pluto move into Aquarius. We're going to see Neptune move into Aries next year. And then we're going to have Uranus move over into Gemini. So we're going from feminine energy into this masculine fire, right? And so what does it mean? So like, what does it mean? What does it mean for change revolution? And people are always talking about the youth are going to save us. And I have a lot of problems with that for a number of reasons. But the biggest one is because we all have a responsibility in the creation of our life, in the creation of the lives we want to have, so therefore society, right? And when we want to give it up to the youth while also not allowing the youth to actually be youth, be children, be able to be and play, right? Then I argue right now at this age that we're in, this 40 to 42, this kind of quote unquote middle age, many of us are breaking because we're supposed to be creating. We're supposed to be recreating life, our lives, therefore helping us recreate the idea of what life could be. And so I was like, Forrest, why don't we talk about what it means for a both of us of 42 to create our lives, since as Venus and Mars, we both left very long-term relationships. We were in the dating scene. We're in the creating scene. We're in the Black queer scene in Chicago. So for you, what's going on with you? And how do you think about this life right now that you're living?
Okay, so before we go there, I wanted to add one more piece on.
Yeah, please do. Add it on.
One of the things that we also have to consider about kind of putting that much weight on the youth is that you and I live at the location of what the ramifications of that shit is.
Yes.
Which means we were raised by boomers. The people who had all of that projected and put upon them, because a lot of the times when people talk about boomers, so much of the focus of that is on white boomers that you ignore the experience of Black boomers. And Black boomers were the children who were put in their Sunday's best and then paraded out to be mauled by dogs and fire hoses and shit. Like, they didn't really get a childhood. And so much of their imagination was stamped out that as they're trying to raise you, they can't. One of the things that was so not relatable between me and my mother was that she could not imagine somebody making a career off of creativity, because that was so much not a part of what their reality is. Like, she could not fathom that you can build a career off of creativity. So her whole thing was like, that's a cute hobby, but you need to be practical. And all of those supposed tos that we were raised with, you know, we grew up during the era of seeing like annual telethons of the United Negro College Funds. Everybody telling us,
oh my God, I forgot about that.
That we had to, that was the way out, that was the way forward, that was the pathway, that you go get educated, you go do these things, and if you follow steps, you know, A, B, C, and D, then you're going to reap the benefits of that. And then adulthood came. And we've had a continuous falling apart of everything. But what I would say is kind of when we're looking at ourselves, looking at Gen Z, we're in the position that like Silent Generation was with boomers. We can put everything on their backs, or we can say, we got to take a little bit more agency here. And especially, you know, coming from the background of being an educator of children kind of in that era within the last, you know, 10 to 15 years, No Child Left Behind has been a huge dismantling of the education system.
Yes.
And of critical thinking.
Yes.
And there's been a huge like injection of very puritanical binary thinking, which means these babies are not equipped to lead us into freedom. It's more akin to us leading them there for them to take it the rest of the way. Whatever spirituality journey you are on, if you want to go biblical, baby, we Moses. We may not necessarily see the promised land, but we got to set it up for them so that this generation of Josephs can take it on out. And that's kind of how we have to see what we're doing. We have to build the foundations of it. We have to break a lot of shit because a lot of it did not work, and we're living proof that it didn't work. So we have a choice to make of, do we want to keep perpetuating the same lie and having them hate us because we've lied to them? Or do we want to break some shit and do something different?
And y'all understand why we're friends. This is why we're friends, because this is what it is, right? I mean, and I'm glad we brought it here first, because I agree with that. Being so at 42, especially if in the U.S., we really are the last generation that did not have it. We were not institutionalized in education via testing. We were on the very cusp of it. They were coming in with the No Child Left Behind as we were going into college or outside of high school, if you don't have to go to college. But if you're going into college, there was a different way we entered in. You are K through 12, so it's interesting for us. So you saw it there. I actually saw it in higher ed when I finished my PhD, was coming in as a very young academic and, you know, coming in to teach. It blew my mind from one class to the next. It was just one class. I saw a stark difference in people who were able to analyze and question and engage with text and concepts versus those who were confused when you gave them an answer and it's like, no, what do you think? And they were just giving me what they wanted me to hear, right? Because it was the answer. And I was like, this is a problem. Like, and so the way that, this is what I'm going to say though, we have to also take responsibility in how we responded, because it was like this, well, I have to do more work thing. I think we should have taken a step back as educators and been like, we are losing the ability to actually critically engage. So we can't actually do our jobs. You can't teach. You know, we can't teach, right, as educators, if we can't question shit. Because you want to put everything into a binary, right? So you are absolutely right. If we are the ones who remember, because you talk about remembering, right? So because you unlocked a memory when you were like the telephones, the TV. I'm like, I remember that shit in the 80s and early 90s. Like you sit there and you saw it because you had, because you were watching for the TV guy coming through.
Every year was Lou Rawls. Oh, never find. Yes. Religiously. Y'all gotta keep in mind now, I'm a child of the 80s, but I'm a child of the 80s who my mama did not, she refused to pay for cable. She said there's perfectly good programming on there for free. I'm not paying for anything. So I watched things like the award shows and things that came on regular TV, because there was no Disney Channel for me. There was no Nick at Night, none of that. For me, because
there was telethon.
So that's what I had. But yeah, it's one of those things. And okay, so let me really kind of fuck some shit up. So the school that I taught at as a teacher was actually the school that I graduated from, and I took the scenic route. I did not go straight from high school into college and everything. I took the scenic route. I didn't really get serious about college until I was about maybe 27. Well, about 26 or so. So by the time I graduated from college, it was coming up on about it was just before my 10-year anniversary from graduating from high school. And in that time, I saw firsthand the divestment from public education, because I mean, it was palpable for me, because I remembered what was there when I was a student versus what was there when I was a teacher. I saw the demographic shift in the sense that we've gone from, like, we talk about school segregation as if it's something of the past, but segregation has just gone from micro to macro. So instead of black and white schools themselves, there are black and white school districts. The school that I went to when I was a student there was a majority white school district, because we were kind of more rural. We were in the rural part of Dallas. There were still some students. We were still doing minority. We called it M&M. That we were still busing kids to, like, desegregate. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it was a majority white school. When I came back as an educator, it was primarily black and Latino. So many of the resources gone. The school was essentially in disarray, and there just wasn't room to teach. I had a freshman class where I had a student in there who was like, he was a 19-year-old freshman. And I was like, baby, this is clearly not your mode. What can I help you figure out? And I helped him kind of figure out, like, GED type situations. Cause I was like, this is, ain't no point in be wasting your time in here. Like, what can I help you figure out that will actually work for you? Yeah. And I actually really loved working with kids that age because we think about them as high schoolers, quote unquote, but they're babies.
Thank you.
They're oh my God. You give them some colorant, something to color, that like they're literal babies. And they still need you to kind of like met things out. But if you're just doing a test, you can't do that. And you can't give them the attention they need. And sidebar, it's also that experience is one of the reasons why I will never believe anybody who says they looked at a 16-year-old and they looked wrong. No. If you've been around 14, 15, 16-year-olds, they look like children. Because they are.
They are.
So it's one of those things where it's like, girl, okay, y'all are tripping, but back on track. But yes, it's one of those things where when you see that, you see how real the divestment, and that was a relatively short period of time. Yes. It hadn't even gotten to 10 years.
No, it collapsed very quick. Yes, it collapsed. But think about it for us, right? If we think about that time period, you said so many good gems right there. My head. Because it all matters, right? When we divested from the actual ability to be critically engaged to testing, alongside then taking away funding in the arts in music. Because remember the whole 90s? Bringing back the music, the whole VH1. All I remember in VH1 back in the day was actual music videos, what they would call the old school music videos. But a lot of funding and a lot of campaigning and advocacy around Save the Music. Reaganomics literally kept, and it started first where in the inner cities. So this is what happens. And people need to understand, because what you just said was such a great, important historical context. And people are like, well, that just shows that Black and Brown students aren't as good at academically. No. What happened is they did segregation differently. They did Jim Crow differently. They never got rid of Jim Crow. They just shifted it from, like you said, Black and white to be overtly with it, to then using what? School district lines, and this is why they took over the school boards and why they took over the school boards the last 10 years so hard in the banning of books, because that became the new place you could legally Jim Crow.
Yeah. I mean, this is why they're pushing for school vouchers.
Thank you.
Because vouchers literally, and this is why I will tell any Black or Brown parent, baby, vouchers are a way to suck all of the resources out of your local schools.
Thank you.
Because they're already, when they've done studies, when you look at who's utilizing the school vouchers, it's people who weren't in the public school system.
Thank you.
They weren't in the public school system. So now you're just basically giving them a subsidy to pay for their kids to go to private school. Meanwhile, unless your kid is the literal best and brightest, so that they can separate them from everybody else, all of the resources have been drained out of your local school, and they have even less to work with when they were already working with so little.
Because they thank you. It's a huge MLM. Thank you. It's an MLM. Like, this is how we maintain it, right? And so, but the thing is, we remember a time before. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't great, but we understand that there was a difference and we could feel that difference, right?
Yeah, I was still able to get a quality education in public school. I still learned critical thinking skills in public school. I was still able to do these things in public school. But even as a teacher, learning how, oh my God, I'm like, so you want me to teach a classroom of 30 students, differentiate learning between those who are kind of higher, those who have IEPs, be able to do all of this at once. And I was lucky because at least the high school I was at had block scheduling, so I at least had a reasonable period of time to educate. But when they're not on block scheduling and they're in a classroom for 55 minutes, understand that teacher maybe only has 15 minutes to educate your child. Like, they do not have any time. Like, block scheduling at least gives them enough time where they can get everybody in, get everybody calmed down, and still have enough time to educate before you lose them. You have them less days a week, but you have more quality time with them. But were it not for block scheduling, I would not have had any real time to educate them, because it would have just been focused on classroom management. And that's what we're seeing now. Classroom management and teaching to tests, and that's what's what we're seeing kind of play out in the kids that are kind of coming out of that system now, which is why it's like, girl, you want to put the future in their hands?
And that's the thing, because like, the thing is they're not allowed to actually imagine. That's the purpose and that's the focus, right? We talk so much about the prison industrial complex. That is one very direct pipeline. But the other one is to the factory line. But the factory is not the old school 1920s Henry Ford. The factory line is now your ass in corporate. Your ass now working from home. Your ass in all these different industries, right? You need to be trained to be disciplined, to think about you being able to keep yourself contained for a block amount of time and 5 days a week. And then you wanting that. So you based your idea of identity and success on how much you fucking make. That is a millennial and Gen X fucking story.
And to add on to that point, the educational industrial complex is at the root of both of those.
Thank you.
Let's
add on to that for us. Hold on, before you keep going, because add on to that, because the foundation of the nation is based within the goddamn education system, the main ones being the Ivies. Keep going for us.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Once you start getting into, when we were in school, you could maybe get in trouble and get like an in-school suspension. But you weren't getting a record. You weren't being arrested by the actual police. You would, get in a fight, you get an in-school suspension, and that's it. Maybe if you got a lot of those, you ended up going to an alternative school. But ultimately speaking, you were still within the educational sphere. Now, they're exporting all of that to essentially the prison industrial complex to start early. The wild part is because I was an angry kid, I did get into a lot of fights. And I actually got into something to where they ended up expelling me for a year. And they wanted to send me to an alternative school. And by the grace of, the universe, the alternative school was so full that they could not take me on. And I was so low priority that they couldn't take me on. So I just ended up doing a semester of school at home, just by myself, like self-guided, because I had been expelled. But because of that, I never fully got pulled into the system the way that the person who was being heinous towards me was trying to. And that's one of those kind of sliding door moments that if I had gotten pulled into there, inevitably, I would have gotten pulled into way more shit.
Yeah.
But that's how easy it is. And that's how much of a game of chance our educational system is, which is why I advocate. Obviously, you have to do what your resources allow. But if you can keep your kids out of this shit and just do it yourself, if you have the time and the resources to, God bless. If not, just make sure you vet and make sure you stay on the school's ass, because on some real shit, they are very much moving to indoctrinate your children. But have the understanding that it's not the teachers themselves that are doing it, or even necessarily the administrators, as far as like your assistant principals or your principals. This is why like state elections and local elections are so important, because it's like, you can say, okay, who's at the presidency doesn't matter, but who's at the school board very much matters, especially if you have kids. Like, it matters.
It does.
So, that's a whole other bag, but just understand that all of these things are intrinsic, because we went from training kids to be thinkers, which is what you and I were trained to be, because things were going so well at that point that they were willing to train people to be thinkers. But now, okay, y'all asking too many questions. Y'all trying to do labor, unions and shit. No, we need to train these kids to be workers.
Yes.
So now it's dumbing everything down so that they can train them to be good workers. And if you can't be a good worker all of your own volition, then we'll just pull you in the system so that you can so that we can enslave you and be one for the system.
Yeah,
but the foundation in either case is the educational system.
And I agree with that. And also too, it's like when you also get pulled into that kind of testing system, the binary is the root foundation of how you understand anything. So the idea of nuance then is almost suspect when you actually want to sit in nuance and gray, right? And I think the biggest thing is, like, we also forget cops weren't always in schools. Now, remember Lean On Me? We were also the generation that got influenced by media and propaganda and the kind of entertainment. And then what was it? Dangerous Minds, was it with Michelle Pfeiffer when they were doing the Walk Through the Valley of the Shadow of Death?
We don't know with my joy though. But it is one of those things, as a quick sidebar, because I'll say this to, like, younger generations. Y'all don't understand, a lot of times y'all don't understand how heinous the 80s and the early 90s were.
It was bad.
Because of the crack epidemic.
It was bad.
Like, no, it was. The context.
It was bad.
If you think things are crazy now, shit was wild.
And we also had things going on too. So then I don't think people understand. We lost generations. I know I was talking about this with Tina and Krista on the episode about gay curriculum, but, like, we lost generations of AIDS. We had crack coming out. Like, we all have stories of having people in our families affected and impacted, right? Like, I'm a kid seeing my cousins doing this shit, right? Like, there's a way that we don't understand that was what we grew up in. At the same time, we also had DARE. DARE to keep your kids off drugs. And that's when the cops came in the school.
That very binary, like,
this is your brain.
If you smoke one joint, the next thing you know, you're going to be giving hand jobs for crack in a week. It's like, it was very extreme.
And, like, they would have them, like, and then they had, like, the dog who was, like, the Scruff McGruff Dare to, like, come to
the crime dog. Gruff.
The crime dog. Like, I remember, and the thing is, so you went to public school, I went to Catholic school, but it really fucked me up. Don't send your kids to Catholic school, especially if they're gay. Just don't do it. Fuck me up, all of us. But anyway, but even with the Catholics in the 80s, I still had critical thinking. I didn't learn about evolution ever until I went to college because they didn't teach it at all. But everything else was still there. And so when I think about this idea of remembering, right, and why the whole point of this conversation, and thanks for sticking with us, y'all, because this is how I'll be in Forrest Chop It Up. It's like, it's like, then if the younger generation, one, is not allowed to be children, like you just said, right? You're not allowed to be kids. And the idea of what they're even taught and what is even possible is now this more binary. We have a responsibility right now for those in our 40s and above to not only believe what the fuck are we experiencing, but remember what was before, not nostalgic, not saying, oh, I want to go back. No, remembering that there are different possibilities and then asking ourselves, what the fuck do we want to create? This is what the Uranus opposition is. So both of us are 42. We're only about 3 weeks apart in birthday, right? I'm a Leo son, you're a Virgo son. And it's like this Uranus opposition is really blowing up our lives right now. For anybody who is got Uranus natally in Scorpio, so because Uranus right now is in Taurus. And we're recording this on April 17th. We're going to post this on the 19th. So we're also going to have this major Uranus-Jupiter conjunction in Taurus. Right now, the most fixed sign of all the fixed signs is getting shaken up. So if you got Taurus, Taurus moon, excuse me. So if you got Taurus placements, regardless, whatever Taurus is in your astrological chart, it is now the bull is moving. The bull is accepting that change must happen. So when the bull accepts that change must happen, which is Venus ruled, which is what Forrest is ruled by, right? If the bull can accept change, and realize that something's going to have to change, because if I were staying the same, that I can't actually have what needed for safety and security. Then, as I argue right now, 40 and plus, y'all, this is our time to actually shine. This is our time to start creating. This is our time to realize we saw our parents and grandparents literally die at this age and older. Saw them get bitter. Saw them get more conservative, saw them lose their humanities, because instead of actually embracing their humanity and realizing that this is now astrologically the time we grow the fuck up, but growing up means to take responsibility for our life and create, they just bought into the structure and system. And can we believe that shit ate them up? Can we believe, even Black folks, our Black parents, can we break this system and cycle and realize, listen, baby, I respect you enough to realize that didn't work for you because it ain't working for me. So can we create now?
I want to emphasize that point in the sense that we saw them die.
Yes.
Not necessarily having to mean they're in the ground right now.
Right.
We saw them slowly kill themselves off to become something that we don't even recognize.
Yes.
Like, I remember the person who raised me being a person full of joy, and that joy doesn't live anymore. I remember the person who raised me being a person who was about adventure, and that adventurous spirit isn't there anymore. And I've just watched somebody that has gotten so fucking beaten and downtrodden by this system and by this state that they are a shell of their former selves. So sometimes that death isn't like a literal death. Sometimes that death is a slow death. And you can take that and expand it out even to families, right? Because when I grew up, it was nothing for my family. My family gathered, like, I know it seems like fiction, but soul food was a real relatable thing.
It really was.
My family got together every Sunday. We all assembled. We all hung out with each other. We all, like, got together and we, you know, we fellowshipped as a family. And I watched the prior generations died, and I watched this, my boomer parents and their kind of siblings not be quite able to hold on to that shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just led to this like living death. And that's why at this age, I'm looking and saying, I know where this world goes. Fuck that shit. I'm not saying that I understand exactly where something else is headed, but it's got to be better than this. It's got to be better than just simply accepting my fate and resigning myself to a slow death, to a living death.
And that's what capitalism is, though. That's the thing. All the time I'm talking about why we got to bring sacred and mundane together, because the spirit of capitalism is one of decay and destruction. So we have seen our parents and grandparents literally become walking dead, right? We are seeing younger generations not even know a history that we took for granted and didn't even realize we take it for granted because it was just kind of our common sense. But then also we forgot because we were always doing and producing and going, right? So now we're remembering. How many of us between 40 and 42 now, you're like, fuck it, I ain't got it, I can't do it. Like, it is what it is, right? And so when I think about, that's how I broke my life. I talk about it all the time. But it really is what allowed me to not only come back to spirit, quite frankly, and ancestors, but also be able to face myself and realize, like, I lived a life that wasn't me. So when the whole coming out and stuff, but even the coming out wasn't even about, again, sexuality. It was about me coming out to myself and realizing I built a whole life on somebody else's dream. My dream was always to be a screenwriter and a producer. Like, I was making screenplays as a kid. Like, I wrote a whole ass, like, my whole thing was murder mysteries. I watched Clue. Then I watched Murder Without Numbers and all them like kind of murder mystery, Murder She Wrote, and that kind of stuff. And I wrote my own screenplays. I wrote my own stories. Like, I really wanted to write music, even though I wasn't a great singer, but like, I tried to play trombone. But like you said, my parents were like, no, you're going to be a doctor, like a medical doctor. And so even when I went to school, when I decided I couldn't do medical school, like, because I tried to do medicine and I was like, I don't like this shit. I want to do anthropology at least. That was like my rebellion. Like, my mama disowned me. My parents stopped talking to me.
Your rebellion was the...
Rebellion was becoming a fucking...
The rigorous field of anthropology.
Yo, I got a PhD and my family didn't show up because it wasn't an MD. No one else even went to finish college by that point. I was literally first gen. But it was a PhD and no one showed up, right? Like I think we have to also recognize too that I think a lot of us are traumatized. Like, if we're being honest, like a lot of us are really fucking traumatized, but like we try to like use different coping mechanisms, whether it be humor, weed, liquor, whatever it is, sex, whatever it is, right? Like we're trying to like make sense of it and also like hold other understanding that the young generation, like we want to be empathetic, but also like have our boundaries. I think we're fucking tired. Like, I honest to God, I think if like you're in your 40s, you're fucking tired at this point because you're like, what the fuck do I do? Because no matter what I do, it's not going to necessarily work. So if I don't create my whole own life, then somebody else is going to do it for me. And that terrifies me more at this point.
I will say this just to kind of drive that point home. Because I'm a person that like ingests things through music. Listen, I will say this. Erykah Badu, my Piscean sister, the other side of my coin, because I'm a Virgo, Pisces. Problematic as fuck sometimes, but...
Yes, she is.
New America, Fourth World War, so goddamn prophetic. Yeah. And to me, the conversation that we have, or that we're having, invokes the spirit of Twinkle. And it's like that notion that, like, listen... We saw our grandfathers and grandmothers work hard for nothing because we still in this ghetto.
Yeah.
So, you know, we end up in prisons, and so many of our generation, especially the generation before us that were our older, because she wrote that from her perspective. She's a Gen Xer. Yeah. She's literally 10 years older than us. So many of that generation absolutely ended up in prison and ended up in blood.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think
we were the little cousins and little brothers and sisters that were like, okay, everybody's fucked up. What are we doing?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Gen X went through some shit. Especially later Gen X went through some shit.
Yeah. That's why I have so much grace for them. Because I'm like, I don't think y'all understand what they had a front row seat for. Like they had a front row seat, especially, I mean, everything I talk about is from a Black perspective because, you know, God bless everybody else. But from a Black perspective, if you're talking about Gen Xers, you're talking about the people who saw their family come back home from Vietnam to no jobs and shit, move right into, like, the Carter era, go through Reaganomics, then go through fucking, like, they were at the front lines of Reaganomics, the crack epidemic, and fucking AIDS.
And then three after that, Clinton brought in three strikes.
Yes. And they thought that they were getting away. Mm-hmm. And then to have that, so many of them ended up like just fucked up in the game. So that's why I have a lot of grace for that. I have a lot of grace for them. Not to say that you should be like extra with it, but I have a lot of grace because I'm like, oh God. I mean, even our age, I have, like, elder millennials because, I mean, when I look at younger millennials, I'm like, y'all don't understand what it's like to, you see it somewhat now, but, like, what it's like to have your life fall apart every 10 years.
Yeah.
Because that's, we were the last generation to be sold. This is what you do. There's a very clear template.
Yeah.
You do this template, and if you do this, everything's going to work out. And then you get out, and within 2 years of us getting out of college, 9/11 happens and everything falls apart. And then we start assembling our lives, and then the 07-08 crash. And then we start assembling our lives, and then COVID. And it's like, every time we start assembling our lives, shit falls apart. Which is why we're now at the point where it's like, well, girl, I might as well figure out what the fuck I want to do, because... none of that shit works. You've shown me that none of that works. So, like you say all the time, do I believe it?
That's what I'm saying. We believe it because the thing is, we were also at the same time sold that, I think, but it's a lot. We were sold some bullshit that we could take on good debt. We were told that taking on student loans was good debt, that it was going to help us. Like, I don't think people understand. We didn't have So I remember because I was in higher ed, right? And I worked with a lot of, I was a McNair Scholar director, and then I worked with a lot of populations of underserved and underrepresented populations. So we were always with FAFSA. We always had to do income verification. FAFSA had to do more education because of how fucked up they were to our generation. Like mm-hmm. we were given loans after loans. There was no understanding of how to pay them back. Like I will say, like I came in on loans being 1.75% interest. Most of my loans were 1.75% interest. That was the federal loans we were told were good debt to take out to supplement our education. So I had a Perkins because I had no motherfucking money. And then I had subsidized and unsubsidized loans. I had no idea what that shit meant. All I know is that my parents didn't have to pay because they weren't going to pay anyway. Like they weren't going to pay anyway. So someone was paying some shit, right? But we were also told to go to school or go to military. And I literally was looking at the Marines because I was like, the Marines were recruiting real heavy. And my family was military family, right? So I was like, maybe I should go in. But then I'm like, I don't like being told what to do like this. Like, this is not going to work. So I didn't do that. And knowing my personality.
So my saving grace, my family was like, mm-mm.
Yeah, no, that wasn't going to work for me. My other tips are like me, I'm the black sheep. I'm the black sheep in the family, right? I'm not like my family. So, but at the end of the day, though, we still took on debt. And that mm-hmm. was said good. Like we were literally told that was good. That now looking at that now, people are like, that makes no sense. Well, no shit. We were the forefront of that.
It won't affect you buying a house. It won't affect anything. You'll just be able to.
But there was no education, nothing. So all these new parameters put in, like you all having to go through a whole exit survey. That was because they fucked us so bad. An 08 crash happened and Sally Mae happened and the for-profit shit got exposed. This is all Dr. Tressie McCotton's work, right? That was literally our generation. And then we were told, go ahead and just side hustle. Just go ahead and just do Uber Eats, it's Uber. That was the first thing that came out, right? So like the whole gig and hustle culture was also us. Like, so I think when we talk about imagining, right? The whole point of this is like, when we talk about imagining, like no shit we broke our life at 40 and 42, right? No shit we were like looking around and being like, and not only am I tired, this is not the life I want to live.
This can't be it.
This can't be it.
This can't be it. Especially when we were looking, we grew up looking at people at the age that we are now and they're like taking vacations and like,
Got
they're 10 years deep in the house. We're like, to the point to where when they're our age, we're thinking, oh, this is when you're going to get like a cabin at the lake or something, a little vacation home or something.
No. I'm like, I need a new mic. Like I gotta figure out how to buy a new mic. Like it's completely different. But thing is though, talking to my, like, when I did talk to my mom, because we ain't talking, but when I did talk to her, just the inability to understand the present moment too. And I'm like, I get it. Like, the thing is, like, you should understand. You grew up a poor ass black woman in the South and had to come up to the North and literally became a nurse and all this shit. But then, like, I'm trying to talk to you about, like, the cost of living, like, how houses cost. And I realize your mind is still stuck in a time frame that is not here. And you're mm-hmm. angry, though, because you also are living a life that you really don't like, but you can't admit that either, right? And how many, if we look at our parents, how many of our parents actually can't stand the other person or we can't stand their life but can't admit it?
Even if they can, right? Because my mom was a little, because I mean, I'm still in touch with her, but I learned, like, oh, God, like, years ago that, oh, I can't come to you. Like, there are certain things that I can talk to you about, but I can't come to you for career advice because your head is wrapped into the way things used to be. Yeah. And shit ain't like that no more. So my mom was a teacher. She worked for the school district for 30 some odd years. And it's very much get somewhere and work and just stay there. I mean, my mom was the first generation in her family to go to college. And she's talked to me about how, like, her only ambition was to get a job at the bank. And it was a guidance counselor that said, actually, you're smarter than this. let's find a scholarship for you and get you at an HBCU. And that got her to be the first generation. But even with that education, her imagination could only stretch so far because the indoctrination was so strong. So in her mind, it's like, listen, you got a job. They pay you a decent amount of money. I don't want to hear about how unhappy you are. I don't want to hear about how unfulfilled you are. You suck it up, yes, and you just go to work and you get it done and you just push down your feelings. Like, boomers are experts. And we're going to repress the fuck out of our feelings.
But then
it's going to explode every once in a while.
It's going to explode, though. It's going to explode. But
we're going to repress the fuck out of them feelings. So it was one of those things where I understood, like, oh, I can't come to you for advice because any advice you give me is based on an antiquated system of the way things used to work, and the world just doesn't work like that anymore. Yeah. So in her case, it's less that I can't accept that I hate my job. It's more that I hate my job, but it's the job.
Yeah.
So you just stay there, even if you hate it. And it's like, girl, for real?
And that's what a lot of us are now. Like, well, girl, for real, though, because, like, and all this whole idea of, like, I'm just going to suck it up. This shit don't work. And it's not cute no more, because now not only do I not like my job, I'm having to spend all this money to try to fix my body and fix my mind, while also now having to support your ass because now you're breaking down because you done suppressed it for how long and you done suppressed it with how many substances. So now I got to figure out how to work with you in your older age while also raising these younger folks. If I have anybody young and not even biological, you just might have children or other people you got to work with, right, or deal with. So, like, again, like, no wonder why we're fucking tired. So this is where I'm like, well, fuck it. Fuck it. Then what the hell
do you want to take it back?
Right, take it back. So, like, this is where I think my Mars comes in, but also where it's like, I'm Venus dominant, but it's like behind the scenes because a lot of my Venus is in my 12th house. So it's like, that 12th house is coming alive now for me. And it's like, well, then fuck it. I already broke my life, right? I already realized the shit wasn't working. It was breaking me. So either my body was going to break or I was going to break. So I said, fuck it. Might as well break it myself. This whole Scorpio thing, right? But it's like, now what am I creating? And this is where the shit gets messy. Because I'm like, I done studied humans for so long, right? Now I know why I studied this shit. Because I was prepping myself for when I turned into an adult. Because I'm like, being human is really hard. Like, dating has been like, not only is dating, so dating and then also trying to build community, right? Because, like, I broke my so-called community because I realized it wasn't community. Like, if I can't express my needs, if I can't, like, just show up how, like, ridiculous I can be, like, I'll text you, I'm like, blah, 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 blah. Like, I have to be able to be myself, right? I'm a fucking Leo. Like, I have to be able to be myself and be able to, like, emote. So now at 42, trying to do this shit, oh my God, it's like a whole new world.
And it's especially hard because we have this thing that we've been doing. Thank goodness that therapy is more commonplace, that folks are kind of seeking mental health care, right? But especially as a Black person, you have to be careful about what therapy is for you.
Yes.
Because, and for everybody, therapy can be teaching you to fucking cope and to just accept a fucked up reality, right? But beyond that, I say this specifically for Black folks. There are ways in which we engaged in community care without calling it that.
Yes.
That in some cases, westernized perspectives of therapy, because you got to understand the whole fucking therapy psychological, like, industry is built on extracting from indigenous models of community care, but perverting them to justify the individualism of white supremacy and capitalism. So grain of fucking salt, right? If you can find a decolonized therapist, amen. But even if, because sometimes you just need somebody to help you process the shit.
Yes.
Right. But just understand that there are certain ways in which you're going to have to kind of check shit. And I say that in this sense. A lot of folks are taking therapy language and are using it to justify being hyper-individualistic.
Yeah.
And we got to be careful about that. Because in community, I've heard somebody talk about, well, you don't owe anybody, you don't owe anybody, you don't owe anybody. But if you are in a community, you do owe people things.
You do. You do.
Because we're accountable to each other. It's this weird shit that I'll see where folks will want to hold celebrities who they are cannot possibly be in community with accountable. But when it's the motherfucker next to you, I don't owe you anything. But you do because you're in community with them directly. So if you want to maintain healthy community with them, you owe them things, they owe you things, because there's an even exchange there. And we get kind of worried about things like dumping and things of that nature. And being vulnerable with your community, that's how we survive.
Yeah.
I'm happy that most of us are taking mental health seriously, but don't lose them fucking recipes.
Yeah.
Because how we got by in the face of some of the most inhumane conditions while retaining our humanity was engaging in models of community care. We relied upon each other. We vented with each other. The key, though, because this is where shit can turn into trauma dumping versus, like, relying upon your community. Bitch, don't only share your trauma.
Yes.
Don't only share the fucked up things that are going on. Share your joy. You know, obviously you want to make sure that you have a community that can share in your joy. But yes, when you find a community that can share in your joy, share your joy. And yes, share what you're going through. Because that's how we get through together. We pull each other up. Sometimes I might be on one, but I need my community member to be like, bitch, you on one. Sometimes I may be down, but I need my community to be like, oh, it's cool, feel your feels, but we're going to get the fuck back up. And I get to be that for somebody else. And that's the beauty of community. That is imagining what a world can look like outside of capitalistic and colonial mind states. It is us being able to rely upon each other rather than these bullshit institutions that do nothing but extract from us.
And I think that's really important because you've done that for me, right? Like, I just texted you the other day and I was like, I don't want a trauma dump. And you're like, basically, bitch, please. Like, that's just like you saying how you feel. And I think that's
you really saying.
Like, we're doing other things. And I think it's because, like, and this is where we have to realize that we're also always healing, too, because when I'm vulnerable with someone, like I'm vulnerable with you, it feels like I'm crawling out of my skin. It feels like my skin is literally going to fall off of me, right? Because it's something new, because I'm actually expressing a need. But right now, again, because the body is on, right? And thinking about this idea of Taurus and this idea of like, what does it mean to believe our experiences? My body is like, no, girl, you already said you want to sit in ease, but also you want to be able to express your needs. You have to express what you need. And right now you just need somebody who can hold you and be like, I'm feeling X, Y, and Z. And you can say, I got you, A, B, and C, right? So I think that's also what it is too. Community is about holding the messiness and being able to allow somebody to crawl out of that skin, right? Because you also know they can crawl out of their skin. Because I would have no problem if you did it with me, right? But I was like, why can I hold yours, but I can't do it for you, right? Like I can't.
It's that, and it's also this thing where we're taught, because of the way that capitalism likes to silo us off into these nuclear families,
yeah,
that the only place that you're allowed to be vulnerable is within the context of romantic relationship. And if, like, there's a lot of talk online about decentering men, and I'm with that shit, decenter these niggas, but in the process, also look at decentering romantic love.
I agree.
Like, platonic relationships can be a foundation for community. In most cases, that is a foundation. Because you're not, your community is, you know. So, platonic love, being able to, like, hold things for each other, being able to be vulnerable with each other, being able to share with each other, being able to build with each other. That's a very real thing. But in this society, we're taught that the only location for that level of intimacy is romantic relationship, that in so many cases, people neglect platonic relationship. And that can be a location for that. And it can feed us in that way. But, you know, obviously only if you're open to that. But if you're, if you kind of adopted the indoctrination and you're like, well, I can only do this. My partner has to be my best friend. Says who?
Yeah.
Says who?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Says a model that only says that you need to be siloed off in and unto yourself.
Yeah.
But if we're looking at extended family models, if we're looking at indigenous models that kind of have different familial and community structures, no, it don't have to be that way. This can be, and again, this is not saying that romantic relationship is lesser or isn't like important, but it is time for us to reevaluate how much importance we put on it and to say, you know, these platonic relationships are just as important. And in some cases, because of how fleeting romance can be in this society, they might be a little bit more, because that might be a little bit more of a trustful place to put your vulnerability.
Yes.
Than a romantic relationship if it's not proven yet.
Especially if you're breaking from a kind of heteronormative understanding of what romance is. Because even with you can be gay and still have heteronormativity. Like, it's always shit all the fucking time, right? Like, in all kinds of relationships. I see it a lot in lesbian relationships, right? And like...
Have you seen that Pop the Balloons thing?
What is that?
It's like, I guess there was a dating show about popping the balloons, and so much of it was like... Essentially, it was like a dating show where people were like kind of figuring out if they were attracted to somebody or not, or what have you. And so many of the answers for people who just rejected offhand were like steeped in heteronormativity. And it's like, you're cutting off your ability to have really great connections with folks because you're making these assumptions based off of, this is who I'm supposed to like, this is who I'm supposed to be with. Let that shit go.
And also, you're cutting yourself off from actual real pleasure. Like, let's be real. Like, if you will allow yourself to be in your body, and if you are somebody who is attracted to somebody sexually, okay, I do believe mm-hmm. that people are asexual. So I'm not talking about those who do like sexual attraction. Mm-hmm. You're like, God, then you're denying yourself your own pleasure. Like, you are literally cutting off, and you are disrespecting yourself. You are disrespecting your body and what your spirit wants you to come down here to do. Like, so allow yourself to be like, if you let the heteronormative white Christian gaze go, who would you be attracted to and what would you want done to you? And what would happen if it happened?
Even if you don't know, there's beauty in the exploration.
Right? Right. Safely, with consent, of course, yeah. Right? Yes.
Yeah. This notion that things have to be this way, that if somebody is this particular way or that particular way, that they have to perform in this way or be this certain role. It's like, y'all, the whole point of queerness is to be queer.
Just be queer. Figure it out. Like, that was my biggest thing. Like, when I started dating, man, that was the biggest thing. Like, especially being such a tall woman. Like, I have made it very clear, I'm no label. Like, my label is no label because it depends on the day. It depends on, like, if my hair is longer or not that day, like, dead ass. Like, if I want to put contacts on or not, like, it is what it is, right? But I love a woman. I want to be with another woman, and I love exploring a woman's body with a woman that I'm attracted to, right? But God damn, in this dating scene, like, initially, like, I had to put my foot down being like, do not label me. Do not try to, like, make this into, like, some role-playing thing, unless we both want to role-play and that's a perfect thing we want to do, right? But it's just, like, it started me. But it's like, God damn, like, why are we blocking ourselves before we even know, right? I remember dating...
It's like, pride is always trying to trap you into a role.
Yeah, and that's so boring.
You trying to do that in the context of a room, and not only to you know, you as a, why are you trying to do that to yourself?
To yourself, right? Like, let yourself explore. Let you ex- explore. Like, let's figure out. And if then you figure you don't like it, along again, it's the idea of engagement and consent. But I think this is what I'm realizing now with this, like, in this kind of early 40s, and especially with this Uranus energy alongside, like, you have Neptune and Pluto also doing some shit too. But like this opposition of Uranus, where it's like Uranus is like, I'm going to show you who you are. I'm going to show you a glimpse of who you could be. Do you accept the challenge? All of it. Do you accept the challenge, right? Uranus is like, I'm the higher octave of Mercury. And no offense, y'all. I know Aquarius is love to be Uranus. Does it make any sense? You're Saturnian. Uranus is for the collective. Because Uranus is asking all of us, can we take a look at our higher self? Can our higher self look back at our mundane self and say, baby, this is what you could be. This is your genius. This is what is possible. This is why it rules creativity as well, through the genius, through the electricity, through the occult, through the astrology, right? Through the rebellion, revolution. And so what does it look like if we revolted from the idea of what Middle Ages? What if we revolted and rebelled against the idea of what it means to be middle age? Like, what the fuck would we do as a generation?
And I actually think that we're doing that intrinsically.
I agree.
And I think, so controversial take, the notion of people talking about kind of Gen Z feeling or looking older than millennials or whatever, I don't think that it's that they actually look older. I think it's that they feel older. Because they feel more set in their ways. They feel more puritanical. They feel more there. And whereas us, we're like, girl, I still want to play with toys because I kept getting told that I couldn't do this shit, and why can't I? Bitch, it's my money.
Listen!
I kept getting told that I couldn't do this or I couldn't do that. Why can't I? It's my money, and I've seen you, from the parental standpoint, I've seen what it is to deny yourself all your life. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't want to do that shit.
Yes.
And I've seen what it is to be this kind of black and white. I've learned throughout all of these times of life breaking down and shit not turning out the way that it's supposed to be, even if I'm perfectly going along the template, that it's never actually this black and white. So I might as well play with the changes. Just take it out to the edges and see what...
Thank you. And I think there's so many of us, might as well create, and like I said in a talk I gave, and make it fucking beautiful. Like, why not at this point? Because we already know what hell is. Like, this is what cracks with the evangelicals. Oh, hell is coming. Baby, we've been in hell. I don't know what else hell could be. I don't know what violence could be, baby, but like the demon, I don't see the demon. I'm good. I believe. Like, I'm going to go with the ancestors and sit in something else, right? I think this also makes sense why so many of us are coming back to more lineage-based traditions, or at least coming back to nature, coming back to ancestors, just coming back to self, right? And I tell folks all the time, too, like, if you don't fuck with your ancestors right now, I can understand, too, because sometimes this lifetime is really about you just figuring out you have a body and you're human and you have every ability to kind of sit with yourself, right? But regardless, even if you're with yourself, you're still having to connect with nature, right? So you're having to do some kind of externalizing and connection with other things, other beings. And I think we're realizing at this age, like, not only do we only have ourselves, and not only we can save ourselves, but we are truly having to sit in the reality that we were fed a bunch of lies.
Ooh.
Like, we were experimented on. Like, it was seriously a social experiment. The higher education and funding was a social experiment, right? The shifting of policy was a social experiment. The idea of 401ks from pension was a social experiment, right? Because that would have ramifications for our generation, like Gen X and our generation and after, right? I think that we realized we were socially experimented upon and it didn't work. And not only did it not work, it is violent and there's repercussions to other people around the world that we cannot turn our backs to as well. So if we know all of this and we actually have power, like, the thing is that we don't have power is bullshit, right? Because we grow, especially this is the whole point of us being in our mid 40s. We're grown. This is astrology saying you done been through 40 fucking years of life, y'all. Here, what do you believe? Here's the tools. What are you going to do? What are you going to create? What are you going to be, right? So we grown. So what does it mean to be grown and take responsibility for being grown? which means, what does it mean to take responsibility for our life?
And to fully accept that you are the author of this. Like, you've witnessed somebody be the author of their own fate.
Yeah.
You've witnessed somebody resign themselves to a living death. Like, you've looked at them and you said, but you don't have to do this. In some cases, you've been the voice trying to say, hey, why don't you try this? Why don't you try it? But you've watched them stubbornly resign themselves to a living death. And you're looking at your own life like, yeah, I don't want that to be me. So I'm going to do the weird shit. I'm going to step out on a limb. I'm going to try to figure out a way to make these things work. You know what? All this hustle and grind shit you gave me? Okay. Well, if I'm going to hustle and grind, then it might as well be for some shit that I fuck with. If I'm going to hustle and grind, then it might as well be for a future that I want, not for a future that you're trying to impose on me. And that's kind of where we're seeing a generational difference. And if there's anything that I can say to kind of fellow elder millennials and kind of those of us, like, build. Try it. Because what the fuck else do you have to lose? It's all a house of cards that's falling down anyway. So that thing that you're thinking about, that might be the thing that can kind of provide a pathway or a portal to something new. You might as well try it, because you've witnessed enough to know that simply staying the course is not it. Simply accepting the lie is not it. That really only works for a very small population. So, shit, might as well try. See what happens. I don't know. I don't know how this shit is going to turn out. And that's been kind of the biggest thing for me more recently, is like, I've gotten very comfortable with I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what's happening after this shit. I don't know what's happening right now. I don't know. Like, I can look to things to kind of have a general understanding, but generally, I'm comfortable with I don't know. And I think there are a lot of folks in the younger generation and the older generation who both, like, really need to have the security in knowing. And if all of these instances have gotten me comfortable with anything, I'm very uncomfortable with uncertainty. Because I know that change is going to happen. Change is going to pivot. It causes us to pivot. And it's we're reading Parable of the Sower. It's very much a thing where it's like, well, change is inevitable. So I might as well get comfortable with it, because it's the only thing I can rely upon. The rest of this stuff, I can't rely upon that, because I tried relying upon it and I had to break my life. So now, let's just embrace the fact that change is going to happen and go from there.
Yes. And I think it's a great way to end, because you said something really great. It's going to be weird. So might as well just lean into it. And that's Uranus. Uranus is weird. So Uranus is like, fuck it. Let's make it weird. Let's make it beautiful. Let's make it creative. Right. And so this is exactly why. So Forrest and I are doing our first kind of joint ventures through an evolutionist dreamscape production called Dreaming at the Crossroads. So if you're in Chicago on June 2nd and want to kind of experiment with us through what does it mean to kind of set up the crossroads and start to really dream and imagine about what our futures could look like, working with music and sound and our bodies and our words and our dreams, come on out to the Honeycomb in Humboldt Park. I'll have more information down in the show notes, okay? And as always, y'all, keep dreaming, keep exploring, because it's in the dreamscapes that we can actually allow ourselves to live. And especially if you're in your 40s, we are the ones who really need to take responsibility and take charge in our 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond, and really create the lives for those who can really live. It's our responsibility to make that space. So what seeds are you planting and why? And what would happen if you planted the things that others could truly grow and live from? What would you do in the present? Till next time.